I think when you get to be an old person, there are so many people that shape your mind, who you are. It's all the experiences that you've had with all these wonderful people. And I must say, I've met very few bad people in my life. I've always tried to see the good part, forget about the bad, because we all have a little bad on us.
Welcome to Christ in All Things, a conversation about meaning and purpose.
It's based on a verse from the Bible, Colossians chapter 1, verse 17, which says, Christ is before all things, and in him all things hold together.
Christ in All Things is a listening ear into conversations about receiving and giving the love and hope of Christ.
And these conversations are an invitation, because as much as you'll hear, and as much as we enjoy having them, digital media operates from a distance. And that's not what's best for us, with God or with one another.
So, thanks for listening. And if you're in the neighborhood, we invite you to participate in person in the life that finds its epicenter at St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 210 East Pleasant Street in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. Welcome back to Christ in All Things. I am Pastor Lance O'Donnell.
I'm Pastor Jason Shockman. And if you missed the last episode, we were talking with Grace Beatrice Olson, and it was a joy and pleasure. Folks, please go listen to that one. But this is our second part, Grace, of our interview with you. And we were talking a little bit behind the stage here, or off air. And I want to come back to where we were. You said you were born in 1933, and this sanctuary that we currently worship in here at St. Paul's, they began construction somewhere in the 1915s and finished in 1917 and dedicated the sanctuary in 1917. So that was, a few years before you were born, but not too many. And then you grew up going to that sanctuary for church. Did your family have a pew where everybody sat in the same spot every week?
Yes, basically where I sit. And we came to church every Sunday.
On the pulpits, or lectern side, about three-fifths of the way back.
Yes.
Outside aisle.
Outside aisle. Well, there was six of us. My mother would go in first, and then us six kids, and Daddy would be at the end. And every now and then, my mother would say, poke Daddy, poke Daddy, poke Daddy, poke Daddy.
And just hand it down the line until the kid next to Daddy would poke him.
He was kind of sleeping.
Yeah.
You know, he got up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and so then he would shake his head. How six of us kids and my mother and dad fit in that little Ford coupe, I will never know. But we must have sat on each other's laps or something. But we came to church every single Sunday. And then when we got home, we would have to go upstairs and change our clothes because there were church clothes.
Absolutely.
And we hung them up until the next Sunday, but probably washed once a month or something. But like I say, we didn't have running water. Every Sunday afternoon, we would have visitors at the farm. It was called at the farm, my aunts and uncles and cousins. So I grew up with everybody.
So Sunday was kind of a Sabbath with your family, a day of rest with your family. I mean, I imagine we had early morning chores. You had to milk the cows first thing regardless, right?
Oh, yes, of course. And then Sundays we would eat in the big dining room. On the weekdays we ate in the kitchen with the old cook stove, and it was warmer there. So
I want to touch again that where you've worshipped your whole life has been that sanctuary. And those same pews for 91 years.
That's a long time.
It's a great blessing that not many people can say, right? Not many people can say, I've worshiped in one church, one sanctuary, my whole life. And I'm guessing, not guessing, I know, the hymnal has changed a little bit over that time frame, hasn't it?
Yes, I bought a hymn book that I got from my graduation, confirmation. It's pretty well worn.
And this is the Lutheran hymnal, published in 1941. It's got a black soft cover, and it has your name engraven in the front.
And the back, 1948 in the back.
And the year that it was given to you on the back. Grace, how have you used that hymnal since it was given to you?
I have this sitting on my coffee table at all times, and I use it as a prayer list. Now, whatever page I go to, it's a wonderful thing. And we traveled, and this was always traveling with me, always first thing in the suitcase.
So tell me, you know, I mean, how do you use? So how do you said you use it as a prayer book?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you do that with your hymnal?
I just open it up every night to wherever it lands, and I say the prayers. And they were wonderful hymns. And so many of them I know from memory, because we had to recite all those poems cover to cover, verse to verse. So a lot of...
Is that something you guys did in school?
Yes.
Here at St. Paul's?
Mr. Poland was. He was very strict. If you said thee for thou, you start over.
Wow.
So he was wonderful. And then at Christmas time, we would go into the big church about a month before Christmas, and all the school kids, and we would rehearse Christmas songs for the Christmas night.
Yeah.
And the kids all sang on Christmas Eve or something?
Mm-hmm, right. And we all said a piece. And then after the service, they came in great big buckets of big bags of candy. I don't know if you've heard of that, but there's apple and a great big apple and an orange and mixed nuts and candy. And so we were looking forward to that.
That's a very German thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To give an apple and an orange and some nuts and some candies. Yep.
And then my parents would bring us on Christmas Eve when we had the services. My parents would bring us into town to stay with my grandma, because my dad wouldn't get here in time for the service to start. And so my grandma on both sides, Grandma Waltman, she belonged to this church, and Willie Miller and her father, her brother, and his wife was Ratke. That's another name here in our church. So, and then my mother and dad would come later on and take us home. And surprisingly, that's when Santa Claus came.
Wow.
So when we got home from church with a big bag of candy, we also had prizes under the tree, you know, presents, because Santa Claus
came while you were at church.
I think it my mother, probably was my mother. So I remember my grandma and her brother and Uncle Willie and Aunt Ella, and you know, like they were next door neighbors. I am so blessed. I am so blessed with all these people in my lifetime.
And if I can say, Grace, we are blessed that you are telling us all about all of them. This is fascinating for me.
Yes.
So one of the Ten Commandments of a pastor new to a congregation is, thou shalt be a church historian. thanks for filling me in, because I could sit and listen to you tell stories about this place for a long time.
I probably would.
And I'd probably learn a lot.
As long as we are taped. Then I could tell you maybe some stories that wouldn't be so good taped. So
Grace, you know, you go back to kind of big picture things that happened for you. You know, your dad, Arnold, and the decision for you guys to have a Christian education, Mr. Poland especially, who, you know, made sure that you learned your catechism and your hymns. What are some other really significant things that stick out for you that shaped you into the person that you are?
Well, one thing, I worked at Pabst Farms. I don't know if you know that.
No, I didn't know that.
For 30 years.
So for our listeners who are new and don't know the history there, tell people what Pabst Farms was.
Well, when I got out, I wanted to go to college, but my dad said no. We had to go out and earn some money. So when I graduated from high school, I did not have a job because I still had it thinking in my mind that I was going to go to college. But Pabst Farms called the office a week before I graduated, and they needed a secretary. So I went out there and got the job. And I was 18, and everybody else was like 50, you know. And I told my dad I didn't like it. And he said, stick it out for 3 months, and then if you don't like it.
So in the Pabst Farms, that was the big farming operation that is south of town, right? And they grew hops and other stuff for the Pabst Brewery in Milwaukee.
A lot of cows, and I was hired to work in the cattle department.
In the cattle department?
Yes. It was like working in a hospital, only instead of people, I had cows.
Yeah.
I kept the pregnancy records of all the cows, and the veterinarian would come through the herd about once or twice a month and write it down on a paper, and I had to put it in the file.
So this was a big industrial farm, as it were?
And a lot of farmers around here ship milk there.
Okay.
When the cattle department, when the highway went through I-94,
yeah,
the herd was dispersed.
Okay.
Pabst has had 7 farms, 1, 3, 5, and 7, 2, 4, 6. And we kept all the records. And when the highway went through, Mr. Pabst wanted to build an overpass or underpass so they could get to all the farms. And the state would not allow it. So then the herd was dispersed. And then they put me in the dairy department where I made out the farmers' paychecks twice a week,
twice a month.
And everybody around here in Sullivan, Exonia, Oconomowoc, north of, all sent the milk out at Pabst Farms. And that was, when that was phased out, then I worked for the Pabst family. So I got to know Pappy Pabst, old Fred Pabst. He was a brewery president at the time. He was wonderful. I learned a lot from him.
What did you learn from him?
Well, the first day I was called into his office, and you, big office, and you always shut the door, you know. And he told me two things I should remember.
And this is Fred Pabst,
yes.
The head of the whole thing.
The head of the brewery. And he bought this farm out here as a hobby farm. It was
this huge
bigger
industrial farm. He bought it as a hobby farm.
Yes.
Yar.
Yes.
Okay. What did he tell you?
He told me the first thing to remember is when I go out the front door to forget everything I heard in there. Because it was like a bank. We took care of the Pabst family from California, Utah, Colorado, Vermont, Massachusetts. We did all the paperwork out here, the trust and all that. And the second thing was put a date on everything. Without a date, you pick something up a couple of years later, it means nothing to you without a date.
And for our younger listeners, this is a big deal because you're dealing entirely in paper. So whereas, mm-hmm. you know, now our young kids are, if we're used to have everything digitally time stamped, but you didn't have that back in the day. So you had to make, in order to keep things in order,
right?
You had to have dates on it.
And the old typewriters, we were made all these farmers' paychecks twice a month, and the price of milk would come in 2 or 3 days before the farmers wanted their checks. So sometimes we worked Saturdays and Sundays, everybody typing around to get those checks out.
And how long did you work for them?
Well, at least 35 years. And I loved it. I always said I would work out there even if I didn't get paid. But that was a little bit of a lie. But Mr. Pabst was so wonderful. He's such a wonderful human being. He would sit, you know, as wealthy as he was, he would sit on the edge of your seat and talk to you like a father, you know. He was just, instead of having a birthday, inviting all his brewery friends over, he'd have us office. Little lady running around with black outfits on, the little white caps. I thought I was in Hollywood. So,
Grace, you counted the fields of the Pabst Farm in a rather interesting way. And when you just kind of did it from memory, like this is the way we always did it. You said 1357246.
Mm-hmm.
Why count them that way?
Well, the first farm was the office. If you go out there now, I think it's pretty well ended right now. But three was where all those buildings are. And then five was test cows. You know, every farm had a purpose. And farm seven was a big farm. And that's where the highway is right now.
For our listeners who might not know the area, but have a general idea, Interstate 94, which, you know, if you go from Chicago north to Milwaukee and then it begins to head west and cuts right through the area, cutting right through. And so this would have been built in the late 50s. When was 94 built? Late 50s, early 60s?
I really don't know. I wouldn't say for sure. But it basically cut the Pabst Farms in half.
In half.
And so to get from one farm to another farm with a farm machinery, we'd have to go all the way around. And so Mr. Pabst wanted that overpass. But the state didn't allow it. But there's so much history at Pabst Farms.
Did the interstate separate the odd-numbered fields from the even-numbered fields?
Yes, I think it did. Come to think about it, I never thought about that. But yes, one was the farm office, and three was, I don't know, farm five was someplace else, but farm seven was a big farm.
So where was two, four, and six?
They were more on Delafield Road, out that way.
Yep, south side of the freeway.
Okay, yes.
We're now where Aurora Hospital is.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So 2, 4, and 6 were south of 94. 1, 3, 5, and 7.
This side.
We're this side of it.
Yeah.
But so just the way you counted the farms in your head as you recalled it was just really charming to me. And I wanted to find out a little bit more about why they did that. I want to touch back to the things we've said that you've said really shaped you into who you are, right? And the first is dad, and that's another Arnold because there were two there, right? Arnold is your dad, and Arnold was your 7th-8th grade teacher,
mm-hmm.
different last names.
Polin.
Yeah.
Polin was this teacher, right? And then we talked about the people that you came in contact with here at St. Paul's School, right? You talked about working at Pabst Farms for 30 years, and that really shaped you. When you quit working, or maybe even while you were working, because it was literally with a week of high school left that you got hired at Pabst Farms, so you went from high school to working at Pabst Farms. Somewhere along the line there, my dear, you got a family of your own.
You met a Methodist boy.
Yes.
I got to imagine he kind of shaped you a little bit, too.
Yes, he was a wonderful, wonderful person. He took such good care of me.
How did you meet Dwayne?
That's a story that...
That we can't tell on the mic? Yes.
Really? Oh, man!
Yes, I would not... I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am. We will honor that.
Absolutely. So you had a family, you got married, and you had your own kids.
Mm-hmm. No, my children are adopted.
Really?
Yes.
That's got to have shaped you as well, adopting children.
I think when you get to be an old person, there are so many people that shape your mind, who you are. It's all the experiences that you've had with all these wonderful people. And I must say, I've met very few bad people in my life. I've always tried to see the good part, forget about the bad, because we all have a little bad on us.
A little, but, she says.
Dwayne's family was wonderful, and his mother, he went to Bible study camps a long time when he was even in high school, and his mother could say the most wonderful prayers. It was off the cuff. It included everybody, you know, they were up in Black River Falls, and when a minister would come, whether it's Catholic priest or whatever, she would always throw out an invitation. She roomed and board them, you know, gave them a car, didn't make any difference who they were. She did so much of Black River Falls. And when people were practically dying, they always called her. They wanted her to pray.
Mm.
So... She was a wonderful mother-in-law.
So he came from a very pious family.
Yes, he did. And I was very close to all his cousins and aunts and uncles, and he was brought up a little bit like me, you know. We didn't ever have an argument with anybody. It was all laughter, telling Polish jokes, German jokes, whatever. Everybody had a good time.
And what is he a Swede?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I assume there was some Swedish jokes in there.
Yes.
Well, with the last name being Olson.
Yes.
Son of Ole.
When he had one or two old fashions, he could really do the brogue, you know. A lot of Ole and Lena jokes.
Oh, he would tell the Ole and the Lena jokes.
Yes, like him.
Okay.
And the night before Christmas, he had a Swedish joke. 'Twas the night before Christmas, and, you know, it was wonderful.
But you notice
our marriage.
Grace isn't going to repeat that joke. That's okay, my dear. You don't have to.
I can't tell you. You would change your opinion of me.
I doubt it.
So, we had, Dwayne got drafted in the Army. He was in the Marines first, went through all the training in the Marines for 3 years, and then we got married and he quit that. And 3 years later, the Army got him. And we got sent out to Washington State.
Oh, because this is during the Korean conflict, right?
Yeah. No, it was German a little bit of German uprising.
What years are we talking about?
I don't 1960.
know. 1960. Oh, I wonder if this is Berlin?
Yes, the Berlin crisis came
no
up.
No kidding.
Wow.
So how was he involved in that?
Well, he didn't ever go overseas.
Okay.
But he went to training. And we had been on a camping trip around Lake Superior. We were married 3 years. And sleeping in tents and sleeping bags. We didn't stay in any motel. We did a lot of camping out in our lifetime. And then when we got home, he had noticed that he was drafted in the Army. And so after basic training in Missouri, he was sent out to Washington State, and we stayed out there during the Army. And then we loved it so much that we stayed out there for 10 years.
I didn't remember that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you were out in Washington State for 10 years.
Yes. And we did everything. We have movies of Dwayne skiing down Mount Rainier in shirt sleeves and rainforest. And I had relatives up in Canada. My cousin lived in Canada.
Where did you live in Washington?
Olympia.
Oh, no kidding. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I got a really good job at the State Department because I was so bored, you know. Dwayne was in service, but...
And so you worked for the State Department for a time.
Yes. And
what did you do for them?
I took a lot of dictation.
Okay. Analyst.
What?
He actually thinks you were a spy, but you're being coy about it.
Well, I took a lot of dictation. I worked for the Employment Security Department, and they did a lot of Boeing disputes, and we would take shorthand for a whole day, nothing but shorthand, and these people, examiners, would go out in the field, and then we would type it up, rough draft. So I had, and Pabst Farms too, I took a lot of dictation.
So it strikes me that in your professional life, between Fred Pabst and the Pabst family, and then the U.S. government, that you were entrusted with a lot of secrets.
Oh, yes, yes.
So a trustworthy person, I mean, not everybody gets to keep that job.
I was taught by Mr. Pabst. I did a lot of dictation and getting back to Pabst when he had a private secretary. And when she would go on vacation, I did all his work.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know if you want to hear this story, but one of the letters that I typed up, Mr. Pabst was thanking somebody for a plaque, and I typed plague, and it went out.
Oh no!
Yes, it went out, and I got called on the carpet for that one.
Oh my!
That's the only time I got called on the carpet.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, thank you on behalf of. Thank you so much for giving me the plague.
I don't know if the Pabst family are listening to this, but it doesn't make any difference.
Oh, Grace.
That's a great story.
That only makes me love you more.
Yeah, I could tell you another story about Pabst Farms, but someday off the cuff.
Someday when we're not recording.
Yes.
What? So we got to finish up here, episode two. I'm curious, since you've been at St. Paul's here most of your life with a 10-year interlude.
A 10-year hiatus out west.
And by the way, when I came back after 10 years, I got my job back right away.
No. Oh, back at Pabst Farms?
At Pabst Farms.
Yes.
Yeah.
They called me.
And your church pew back.
Yes, mostly. And we belong to a Trinity Lutheran church out at Olympia.
Out in Olympia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
So what were you most happy about when you came back to St. Paul's in Wisconsin? What was most pleasing to you?
Well, just stepping inside of the church. Let's see, who was a minister here then?
Was Clausing here then?
Yes, yes. And Clausing had his first beer in Oconomowoc at my brother, younger brother's confirmation party.
He had never had a beer before?
Yes. And I remember Clausing said this, Pastor Clausing.
Yeah.
This is the first beer I've had in Oconomowoc.
Not the first beer of his life.
Not the first beer I've had in Oconomowoc.
Yes. Yeah. I remember him saying that.
He is a German pastor.
Things the Lutheran pastor says.
Yeah. He was wonderful. All the pastors that I've known. And one of the Gunthers, Pastor Gunther.
Oh, one of the early. Yeah. Yeah.
And I remember my dad talking about him. I don't think he was my dad's pastor, but mentioning his name.
Yeah, because you guys go back almost all the way here.
But getting back to my kids really fast. They were adopted out at Washington State.
Yeah.
And my cousin, Neil Marupno.
Yeah.
I'm related to the Rupnos. She was... She got the babies right out of the hospital.
Yeah.
Till they were adopted out. And
how old were you when you adopted the kids?
I was 25 when I got married, probably 30.
Okay.
Yeah. So we adopted them out there.
Yay.
Yes. It's wonderful. But, you know, the teenage years are a little rough.
Right, right. It can be a challenge. But so you had a cousin who helped facilitate all of
that? She was married, you probably won't remember, Peggy Lauber.
Absolutely. Do you remember? Died a couple years ago, Peggy did.
Her father was my first cousin.
Yep.
Franklin. And it was Franklin's sister that was out at Olympia.
Okay.
And we would go up a lot of weekends, spend the weekend with them. And Neoma Rupno and I got to be very close. In fact, her daughter comes to see me now. She's from Newell, Minnesota.
Yeah.
And they stay 3-4 days at my house. And wonderful. So a lot of relatives to talk about, you know.
Well, it's amazing. We're going to have to, our time is up here.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, because it's amazing to see all the connections, Grace, and, you know, and from the very beginning, you know, the Christian faith that was so important to your parents and that is imbued in your life. Great to see that in the life of service you've lived. We're very thankful that you finally agreed to come and be a guest.
I lost a lot of sleep over this.
And it wasn't so bad, was it?
No, not bad. I might even do it again sometime.
Yeah, we would be honored.
That would be a treat. We need to probably have you. We need to get your sister on here too.
Yeah.
Florence will come and talk to us.
Yes, I would love to have her come.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. We can get them both at the same time.
Oh, Lord have mercy. Well, the Lopna girls.
maybe you shouldn't tape that one.
And friends, that's a good place for us to sign off and say thanks for joining us at Christ in All Things. For show notes and other information about Christ in All Things, visit ChristInAllThings.org. Comments may be emailed to comments@ChristInAllThings.org.
We're thankful to provide Christ in All Things to you as a gift.
But it's not free to produce and distribute.
So if you'd like to help us make Christ in All Things a self-supporting show and have a little fun in the process, please click the support page at ChristInAllThings.org.
A donation of any kind gets you a dozen environmentally friendly Christ in All Things straws to share with your friends. Pastor Shockman loves these.
That is so not true. You love those way too much, and I still can't believe you bought them. A donation of $200 or more gets you some cheerful on-air clapping. And a pair of Wisconsin-made wigwam hiking socks.
A donation of $1,000 or more gets you thunderous on-air clapping. And a handmade Christ in All Things leather folio by the Murdy Creative Company.
If you want to donate more than that, well, fly us wherever you want, and we will record Christ in All Things at your chosen location. Within reason, of course.
All post-production surplus supports Youth Ministry at St. Paul's. Thank you for your support.
Christ in All Things is a production of St. Paul's Lutheran Church, 210 East Pleasant Street in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin. For more information about St. Paul's, visit splco.org, email us at info@splco.org, or the old-fashioned way, give us a call, 262-567-5001. Intro and outro music, setting by Joseph Hurl. Copyright 1998, Concordia Publishing House, used with permission.